Welcome to the Faith Driven Investor Podcast. If you're a fund manager, investor, or financial advisor driven by your faith or want to be driven by your faith, then you're in the right place. The best way to stay connected in the Faith Driven Investor community is to sign up for our newsletter at faithdriveninvestor.org. This podcast doesn't exist without you, our community. One of the things we've heard the community ask us for is help in finding great deals to invest in. And so we've launched Marketplace. It's a new platform of funds and direct deals. Everything from private equity and real estate funds to ETFs. From philanthropic to market rate deals spanning the U.S. and emerging markets. Check it out at faithdriveninvestor.org/marketplace. While you're there, please send us any thoughts you have about how this podcast might better serve you or any questions you have about being a faith-driven investor.
All opinions expressed on this podcast, including the team and guests, are solely their opinions. Host and guest may maintain positions in the companies and securities discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as specific investment advice for any individual or organization.
Hey, everybody. It's the Faith Driven Investor Podcast. We're glad you're back. Today's guest is Eric Kim, co-founder and managing partner of Goodwater Capital. As early investors in Facebook, Twitter, Spotify, and others, Eric and his team know a thing or two about the tech startup world. But that's not the limit of Eric's expertise. He's done some great thinking about what spiritual integration looks like in their firm and how his faith guides him as he's part of stewarding a portfolio of over $1 billion. I'll let you hear the rest of it from him.
Welcome back to the Faith Driven Investor Podcast. Today is super cool for me because we're on with a good friend of mine, a guy that I've been able to be in a Bible study and community group of sorts over the course of the last couple of years, a number of us who are serious about our Christian faith and who got his place in the world of investing have gotten together just to encourage and challenge each other in our pursuit of knowing God and honoring him through our vocations. And it's with Eric Kim that we've got today on the call and been looking for this podcast for a while. Eric, thank you very much for joining.
Henry and team, thanks so much for having me. It's a real honor and blessing to be here with you all and your listenership today. Appreciate it.
So we have and I love that. It's an official title for listenership that esteems our audience, which needs to be esteemed. Awesome people. We're celebrating the fact that we're now in something like 75 different countries, but it's been super encouraging to hear people come back in with great feedback and just great affirmation. So thanks for acknowledging that. And one of the things that you probably know, and everybody in our listener base knows, is that we like to hear the stories, the personal stories of the people that are on an episode with us. We want to get into some really neat things about the mission and the vision and the values and how you think about things like a shadow mission. Today, we're going to find out what in the world is a shadow mission. And then we're also going to find out a little bit about the role that consumer technology plays in this post-COVID or current COVID world. But tell us about who you are, where you come from. And then in the mix of that, I want to know, what is your favorite piece to play on the cello?
Oh, love it. Thanks for bringing that up, Henry. Well, guys, again, it's just an honor and pleasure to be here with you all. So my parents immigrated from South Korea to New York City in the early 70s, which is where I was born. And when I was quite young, I moved to St. Louis, Missouri, where there weren't a lot of Koreans, where I grew up. Was there through high school, grew up as a pretty serious musician, and went to Yale for undergrad, actually initially as a music major. And it was actually at Yale where I experienced the power of consumer technology and faith in a really interesting way. When I was a senior, 9/11 happened, and I think everyone will remember where they were when they heard about the atrocity that happened. And for me, it was particularly painful. I had interned at a hedge fund that had some brokerages associated with it that were completely wiped out by what happened on 9/11, hit particularly close to home, being on the East Coast at that time. And during that experience, learned about the power of music and technology and community, because we came together as a group to host these benefit concerts. And I was a cellist on campus, and we pulled together other groups. And the way we advertised through that was through social media, kind of the version of that back then. What was social media were these kind of chat boards and ICQ messenger kind of environments. And we advertised these benefit concerts. We saw the community, the network effects of getting the word out. What inspired that kind of action at that time was kind of a rediscovery of my faith during college. And we'll probably talk about it later, but a number of really influential kind of forces in my life at that time, everything from Campus Crusade for Christ to growing up as a Catholic, the St. Thomas More Chapel on campus as well. And kind of that ecumenical dialogue and being at the intersection of that really bore for me a really interesting kind of faith calling to come to service. And I bring up the 9/11 example because that carried with me throughout my career, going to McKinsey, working at a couple startups, working at a large fund called Maverick, but ultimately feeling called to start with Chihua, my co-founder, in 2014, Goodwater Capital, which we believe is a values-based, a faith-driven, purpose-driven venture capital firm, which we'll talk more about. But again, myself in a nutshell, kind of Midwest kid that now is here in Silicon Valley, just trying to do what we can do through venture investing to hopefully have a positive impact on the world.
So if I remember a bit, and we didn't talk about this in the conversation leading up to the podcast, but if I remember back to 2014, and I had known Chihua for a while, but I just started to meet you, there's a faith story in how you guys got together. Can you share that?
Yeah, you know, there's a number, but God just kept having us meet each other. Kind of, it was serendipitous, kind of flukes of nature at the beginning, but we would literally start running into each other. And we were obviously friends before, and we had gone to business school over 15 years ago together at Stanford, GSB. Chihua was 1 year ahead of me. And then kind of as we were both thinking about starting our own separate firms at that time, God just found ways to bring us together. I remember one day at the Rosewood Hotel, kind of quintessential, you know, Silicon Valley.
Shocking, you ran into him there. I can't believe you ran into him at the Rosewood.
I know. But it was like kind of in the thick of both of us thinking about an entrepreneurial adventure. He was at Kleiner at the time. I was at Maverick at the time. And we had just had a conversation before. And like literally within that, I don't know, 24 to 72 hour, we met again and then had another serendipitous conversation about, hey, what would it look like to start a firm together? And we kept doing that. And then the number of stories around the investors that we would literally meet at the airport that got delayed because the plane got delayed, you know, and then we happened to sit down at the same pizzeria. There were kind of these countless, very serendipitous things that happened and, you know, couldn't help but think that, you know, God's kind of handprints were all over that in many ways. But it was really cool to see how that came together very organically at the beginning.
Yeah, I remember Chihua saying something about it, really endeavoring to understand how to go proceed. And as he was doing that, all of a sudden out of the blue, you called and it was just really cool. It made a real impression on him. And you guys have grown together and grown a fund now that I think is past $1 billion of assets under management mark. So God has blessed your partnership and given you a lot of success. You're a fund that focuses on consumer technology. Talk to us a bit about what it is that you guys do in the fund and bring it into today's environment. Why is what you do particularly important today?
Yeah. So our stated mission when we started in 2014 was to empower exceptional entrepreneurs who are changing the world. And our focus area is just consumer technology. We don't do enterprise, SaaS, security, hardware, biotech. All we do are digital horizontal platforms that touch the end consumer directly. And so whether that's financial services, healthcare, education, online grocery, marketplaces, video communications, Chihua was an investor in Facebook and Twitter prior to me joining him at Goodwater. I was an investor in KakaoTalk prior to Goodwater, which now has 99% penetration as a messaging app in South Korea, an $18 billion company there. There's something very unique about the power of, again, horizontal digital platforms that have network effects, that every time a net new user joins it, the power of that platform becomes stronger. So whether that's a Netflix, a Spotify, telemedicine companies, financial services, fintech companies, peer-to-peer payments, when more and one more user comes into that community or that app, the whole gets stronger. And that's all we do at Goodwater. The entire $1 billion plus of the assets we manage is just focusing on empowering exceptional entrepreneurs who are changing the world through consumer technology, because consumer technology touches billions of lives on a day-to-day basis, if not hour-to-hour basis, whether we like it or not. We are in front of these digital platforms almost every living minute of the day. And so when we think about our mission, our calling, our purpose, we wanted to focus all our energy into what we think is one of the most powerful forces from a secular perspective in the world, which is consumer tech. So we've been in early investors in a company called Musical.ly, which is now called TikTok, which is super front and center in the news these days. And we've been in other companies as well. You know, I'll kind of stop for more questions on this topic and love to explore any area, but I will just leave by saying a lot of those companies end up being fairly controversial also. So whether it's Facebook about privacy, TikTok about privacy, or, you know, when and how should telemedicine be adopted, or what's the privacy or the security around fintech platforms. We as a values-driven investor actually want to be in the thick of those conversations. We want to be right where the rubber meets the road with regards to secular innovation and where consumer behavior is changing, because we think that even if we change the trajectory of those companies by one degree, we will have tremendous impact, hopefully. So, Henry, that's where we're focused as a fund today.
So I think that that's something a lot of people don't think about. And so many people think of their role when they invest in private equity funds as being a passive player in an overall trend. But the reality is that when you come alongside and are an early investor and get a board seat, you're now a partner. You have a voice at the table. And you're right. Consumer technology is a wonderful thing. We all use it to be able to have people who are speaking into the lives of the entrepreneurs to encourage them, but then also appropriately challenge them. Is there an example that you might be able to offer up over the course of the last several years, if necessary, you can leave the name out of it, where there's this kind of ethical kind of fork in the road where the CEO of a consumer technology company is trying to say, well, we see an opportunity here, but your sense of values and faith-drivenness, it tries to encourage them in a different direction?
Yeah. There are several. I'll point to a couple. I'll start by stating our core values, which they are humility, integrity, transparency, quality, service, and then we've added a sixth one, justice, and we can talk more about that. But it's through these lens that first we make it really, really almost painstakingly clear to our entrepreneurs before they sign up to partner with us that those are the values that we're about. So if you want someone in your cap table that has those values, we'll work with you day and night through those lenses. I would say particularly with regards to consumer technology in this day and age, one of the things we're really passionate about that has come up, frankly, time and time again, it's come up before I started Goodwater, it's ever more present today, is the production of children on these platforms. And whether it's pornography, whether it's addiction, whether it's child pornography itself, it's, again, something that is near and dear to a lot of our hearts as parents and as family members, frankly. And we see it. It was something that there was a major platform that we were associated with. I can't name it, but we had to really pound the table with regards to changing our growth trajectory, sacrificing some initial growth to make sure we safeguarded the children that would potentially be in the audience itself. And it comes up time and time again, but I think what is surprising, and not trying to toot our own horn, we fall short in so many ways, but is that we are usually the sole voice pounding the table about these issues. And again, these companies net-net may be seen potentially as very controversial or very, you know, potentially gray in some areas, but what we often think about is, well, if it's not Goodwater, who else should sit in that void to make sure there is a voice of values in some of those situations. So yeah, it's come up, it comes up, and particularly around the protection of children is something that we're seeing and we're quite sensitive to.
Well, as a dad, thank you for that. And William, you're dad of a young child as well. So I know that, you know, it was one thing when my children are a little bit older, 14, 16, and 18, and that is something that's absolutely front and center. But you're investing also in the companies that are gonna be the leaders in consumer technology in the future. To set that out, when you do have that conversation with the entrepreneur and you're pounding the table, do they wonder why? Is you can say, actually, you know, we've got this kind of moral compass that comes from something about who we are. What does that look like about why you're pounding the table? Are you judged in reverse? Just that's a unique opportunity to witness. And yet I shouldn't be prescriptive even in the asking the question about how that manifests itself. But tell us more about you being the sole person pounding on the table and being completely different than the rest.
Yeah, I think it comes down to mission and purpose and really getting at the roots of, and I know you mentioned shadow mission, but often we'll come back to speaking into the hearts, and the heart's already there for these entrepreneurs. They want to do intrinsically something really positive for the role. That's why they risk everything to become an entrepreneur to begin with, but speaking into that side of it, right? And aligning around what is that, remember back, what was that original mission you started this company for? It was for the purpose of serving X or Y. What was that original purpose? And as opposed to kind of the, what I would call often is the shadow mission, and this was popularized by John Ortberg. And John, if you're listening, I'm praying for you, buddy, and we've never met, but you've blessed me immensely as you blessed thousands of people you haven't ever met.
Senior pastor of Menlo Church here in the Bay Area. Great man of God.
Absolutely. But this message around Shadow Mission, I think, is actually where there's light and where there's an entrepreneur's kind of intrinsic nature to want to do good. And then on the other side of that is the desire to be on the cover of Forbes, is to be a billionaire, is to have growth and to break all these records and to have kind of the accolade associated with it. And if we bring it back, speaking into it is not from a moralistic perspective, like this is wrong or this is right. It's like, actually, remember why you started this company to begin with. Remember that real mission and take everything else aside. Take aside the HBS case study that you want written about you. Take aside, you know, all the accolade that you want. Take aside the pay and think back about that mission. And that is, I think, when the heart becomes most vulnerable for them and we can speak into it. And whether they know we're of faith and we're not shy about it, we don't necessarily advertise it on our sleeves either, but it invariably has come up in almost every conversation with the entrepreneurs we work with. I think they understand where it comes from. And where it becomes real for them, whether they are of faith or not, is that they have this underlying mission, which I believe God has blessed them with. And then speaking into that and tying it to the reality that they're faced with to make sure they're making that choice, because they can serve one or two missions in that moment.
Yeah, it's so good. So good. I actually heard that sermon like 8 years ago, and it has changed my life. And I've sent it to so many people. It's just amazing to think about, you know, go in one direction. And then you have, you know, he talks about how you can just be 5 degrees off. Right. Said a lot of times people think you're 180 degrees off and that's how you know, you see you're way off the path. But in reality, it's usually just a little bit. You know, you're probably using the gifts that God's given you. You're probably doing all the things pretty close to it, but you're just doing it for a little different reason. I remember he talks about giving a sermon. He's like, that's what I'm gifted to do. That's what God's given me to do. He said, and my shadow mission is every day I go to sleep and I wake up and I hope it says, amazingly good looking, eloquent man gives incredible sermon once again.
Right. Yeah. It's just those few degrees off, but in an extreme sense, I think the articulation a few degrees off, but those few degrees are in the direction of hell.
And how does that manifest itself for you? What do you feel like you wrestle with as you are thinking through that paradigm?
Yeah, I thank you for asking that, William. You know, when we started in 2014, Chihua and I looked at each other and said, this is not my firm. This is not your firm. This is God's firm. And kind of made that sacred vow to begin with and had that really strong mission alignment. And I think that what is the shadow mission for all of us, I'll speak for myself, being as an investor, of being someone that you measure yourself based on the investments you make, your track record, right? The multiple and the IRR that you have created, the wealth you have created for others, take a lot of pride in that. And I think that the shadow mission is to, as a firm or as an individual investor, is to be a billionaire, to raise a certain X amount of funds, to be on a list, to get kind of the accolade associated with that track record that you establish. And when we started the firm, it was like there was never a mission to create a track record. It was to have impact. And so I think that is the constant battle. And what I love about how Ortberg popularized the notion of a shadow mission is that it's not to say we're going to all just be pure and wash ourselves of this. It's just to say it's part of us. It is there. We can't just cut it off. It's really acknowledging, because part of my pride and my ego is to be the best in investing, is to have the best track record, is to be one of the most successful venture capitalists. I know it. It's there, but naming it and making sure that that is not what I'm feeding on a day in, day out basis is so important. But unless I name it up front and understand that that is my kind of natural tendency, I think that is really what has preserved our partnership, which is really important at Goodwater, and actually helped it blossom, because we're not looking towards our own self-fulfillment. We're really looking towards the fulfillment of the mission itself. Now, we fall short all the time. I want to be really clear. It is so hard, right? And it's just like those magical moments when a brother like Henry with our Christian Accountability Venture Capital Group, you know, can hold you accountable to some of these things and to check your ego. And again, it's just that constant battle that we're in, that I would just, again, encourage everyone who might be listening to this, like, just what is that shadow mission of yours from an investment or from a secular business perspective? And name it. Don't be afraid of it, but name it in the hopes that you can sometimes check it at the, like, just those crucial moments.
I want to dive into that a little bit more, because you're onto something there that, of course, plagues all of us as Christ followers, not just us as fund managers. It's riffing on Proverbs 16:2 and 21:2. All of a man's ways seem pure to him, but his motives are weighed by the Lord. And every time I read that, I am so incredibly convicted. And I have these shadow missions. And the danger, if you have some level of success in the world, and especially as a Christ follower, is that you can pretty much justify almost everything you're doing in terms of trying to create value and trying to participate. And much of that might be true, but you might have this 80% of what you're doing can absolutely be defended as, I'm investing for the flourishing of society. But when selfishness or the approval of others kind of seep in, it takes us further away from God. And so you're doing, and through the work of John Ortberg, but what you're really showing here is that you have endeavored with Chiwa just to be that much more conscious of it. And the humility that comes with that, let me just say that that's different from what you hear from the typical Sand Hill Road venture capitalist.
I have to just thank you, Henry, in particular, because you've been a great mentor to me. And I go back and remember one of the most impactful things you said to me, which I think applies to anyone, regardless of where you might be on a quote-unquote wealth scale or where you are in life. But the metaphor holds true. And you said to me, Eric, never get liquid. Because you may have seen, I think, in some other folks' lives, just what happens when folks achieve some success. And the notion of liquidity, again, doesn't matter where you are on a wealth scale. The notion is that you suddenly have like this freedom to just do whatever you want, because you've got this kind of accumulated currency of here on earth. You can just do whatever you want. And certainly it pertains to the wealthy. And I think it pertains to everyone, just kind of mentally, from a currency of feeling in need and on our knees for Christ and on our knees because we realize how dependent we are on the Lord. And then going to being in a quote unquote liquid situation where, to your point, Henry, we can do whatever we want. I've got the resources. I can hop on this plane. I can maybe get this really nice kind of luxury item here or things like that. And I'm not saying nice things are bad, not by any means. But at the same time, what happens is we're disconnected. We're going from not just being part of this world, but being of this world in that moment. And I just remember back when you told me about that, it's just like a conversation we can all have and be very real about, like, what does that mean for us? You know, whether I've accumulated like an extra few bucks through the stock market the past couple bucks, a couple weeks, like, does that suddenly change your mental state somehow and your attitudes towards the Lord and God? And I think particularly, it's just something we have to really be mindful in being in the investment world.
I completely agree. And that was very encouraging what you said. I need to give credit for that to Jim Bowen, who is the founder and CEO of First Trust Portfolios, a very early investor in Bandwidth on the personal side. He just had sat on a ministry board with David and came on board, and we went out and met with him. And he said, guys, and he dressed and looked a lot like Michael Douglas's Gordon Gekko character in Wall Street. I'll never forget it. He said, never get liquid. I've seen it just destroy families. And on the flip side of that, and there's the cautionary side, the investor that I look to as a mentor, just an incredible class act, really godly man, this guy named Tom Darden. And Tom ran and continues to run Cherokee Partners, $2.5 billion worth of real estate assets and huge land holdings in India and other places like that. Really the best in the world at what he does, which is to renovate what are called brownfields, real estate that has some sort of oil damage or something like that in it. And Tom rides a bike to work. He has immense wealth. But one of the things that really grounds him is not just his faith, but the fact that he is never liquid. Every single time he has any type of liquidity, he's investing in the next entrepreneur that comes around. He has hundreds of investments and different entrepreneurs that are really making a difference in the world. And he does it every single, whenever they go public, he immediately sells the stock. Not immediately, but he'll tell you, you know, he looks for an opportunity to sell the stock and then put in another investor. And as a result, he never has the liquidity around him to think about buying another yacht. And in the process, because he's investing in illiquid assets, either a private equity or venture capital fund like you all have, or an individual angel investments, he's really creating part of the fabric of the flourishment of society. So thanks for having said that. It's encouragement to me, but I need to give credit to Jim Bowen and then the guy who's modeled that out for me, Tom Darden.
Awesome.
That's good. I usually steal John's Shadow Mission sermon, but you already knew about it, so I can't take credit for it. You're like the one guy that listened to the deep tracks and, you know, really upsets me. Eric, I want to take one step back. You mentioned a phrase kind of in passing, but I think, especially for our audience, want to go. You said you were a faith-driven venture capital firm. You know, and I know we've gone around the world a little bit on what that could mean in certain situations, but I want to give you a chance just to maybe from the highest level say, what does that mean to you? Do you look at investments differently? Do you work with your entrepreneurs differently? 100 different things. Do you work with your team differently? Just what does that mean to you in the essence? Because I think there's a lot of people listening that either are that or want to be that. And I think you have a really unique lens on what that means.
Yeah, it's evolving for us. And in 2014, we launched with this mission of empowering exceptional entrepreneurs who are changing the world and did everything we could to serve that mission. In 2020, amidst the pandemic of COVID-19, amidst the pandemic of racism, which continues to burn across our nation and world, we added a sixth value of justice to our five pre-existing values. And the reason I bring this up is that I would say that we launched in 2014 with our mission. In 2020, I feel like we re-emphasized or rediscovered our purpose itself. And that is to bring justice and healing to the world. Again, the notion of justice is that being inspired by Micah 6:8. How do we bring justice to the world? And I think that is, again, where the rubber meets the road for us. That is how we try to measure ourselves as being a quote-unquote faith-driven venture capital firm or being leaders of faith, leading a venture capital firm. I think those are almost synonymous, or I would hope they could be. I hope that who I am on Sunday is the same as who I would be on a Wednesday or a Friday. And so that, I think, is through the lens of, are we really bringing justice to the world? We look at investments through that lens in the consumer tech land. Is this really going to bring justice of some sort to the world? We recently looked at a company bringing telemedicine to the mental health space. And it's frankly heartwarming. It inspires, re-inspires us every time we meet an entrepreneur that is so mission-oriented. And it aligns with this value of justice, that we can actually bring some kind of healing to the world itself through our investments. It also makes us think a lot about our LP base. We've been, as Henry mentioned, really, really fortunate to be at the scale we are in 6 years. And thinking about, where do we take capital from? Are they values aligned? Do they also align with our desire to positively impact the world? And it's not just lip service, but something they're willing to, you know, go to battle on our behalf for. And then certainly our employees. I think that we're a team of about 30 folks here in Burlingame. And how do we think about who we hire? Are they values aligned? And do they share this maniacal desire to change the world for the better? And I think that is our current manifestation. I think this will probably change and mature, but right now we feel like we're in the thick of the battle right now. And so when we prioritize the various meanings of what a quote-unquote faith-driven investor could be, in our current state, the current chapter we're in, what we're prioritizing is to be on the front line of really trying to push this impact to bring justice, to bring healing to the world. That is kind of what is driving us right now and what we're prioritizing within that spectrum of what that could mean. And then we're doing it through our investments. We're doing it through the people we hire and the LP capital that we take on.
Oh, that's amazing. That's an amazing articulation of what that means to you guys, and really appreciate that and your whole team. One thing that comes to mind is I try to get a little practical at some level, as you know, a lot of people here are doing investments, and obviously names don't need to be included in this at all. Could you maybe walk us through a few investments that didn't meet that criteria? You know, companies that you saw that you said, I mean, if we weren't us, I'd invest in that. That's going to make a lot of money and it's going to be a success. And, you know, we may get a call about that from one of our LPs that ask, you better have a good reason for passing on that one, you know?
Yeah. This comes up for us in the financial services space quite a bit. So if you think about fintech companies broadly, and Henry and I and William with you as well, we've been co-investors in some wonderful fintech companies that are really bringing kind of the banking to the unbanked, if you will, or bringing the access to the financial services to the broader community. which is wonderful. I think where we've said no flat out to certain investments is where we feel like it's taking an unfair rake from the consumer with regards to lending, with regards to some of the interest rates that are being applied. There are rules of consumer protection out there already around what you can charge, but there are companies that get around it, I would say, through some questionable practices. And so that's something where we have felt like this is a huge business opportunity, and it's very subjective, right? My view of it is going to be very biased. But what's quote-unquote fair? What's a fair interest rate to charge someone, for example? That's what it comes down to, ultimately. And I think that's where, again, the perspective of the entrepreneurs become really clear about what side they are on in terms of where they would like to take things. For the you want to maximize kind of short-term profits, because it's, again, very easy to justify, well, if they were going to the black market or to some really suspicious kind of lending sources, it's better than that. But those companies are in a position to both profit but also do good, to provide better services. I think where we've seen this really come into your, answer your question directly, is in the lending space. Sometimes we've had to say, you know what, it's just not worth it, because this is going to be a very high profitable company, but these practices just seem unfair. And again, I know it's subjective, but that's just how we feel about those situations.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, absolutely. That's super helpful. And yeah, unfortunately, God didn't lay out venture capital in Romans anywhere.
Right.
You know, there is some things you got to pray about, and you may come to a different conclusion than another investor sometimes, even,
yeah.
Who's also driven by their faith. But staying close to you and what you feel called to do is so unique, and what inspires everybody, I think, to figure out their own story. As we unfortunately come to a close, one of the things we love to do is see how God's word can transcend between our guests and our listeners. And we find it amazing to see how we hear from people that, you know, they just needed that verse today from that other person's life and the intertwining of stories. And so what I'd ask you is if you'd be so generous to share where God has you in his word, whether that is something you read today, something you're in this season, Micah 6:8, I heard it could be that, it could be something else. Just that'd be great.
Yeah, thank you. And there were two things that came to mind when I was thinking about joining you today. And I think the first is, it's just the Sermon on the Mount. So take any part of that. But I think what I am constantly impacted is blessed are the poor. And what does that mean for us? I kind of purposely am calling this out for her because we're in venture capital and kind of in this secular tailwind of investing and things are going up and to the right and all these things. But what does it mean to be blessed are the poor? And I would say that is something that can mean a lot of different things for different people. For me, it's to be poor in all things but Christ. And I think that is just something that I hope that people can reflect about today. And obviously, we've got a lot going on as a world politically and with the pandemic. And amongst that, whatever state we're in, we can be both kind of very secularly rich and also secularly poor, but still not poor in the way that was being talked about in that sermon. And how can we gear our hearts to really be rich in Christ and just to be rich in Christ alone? So hopefully that makes some sense to folks and just kind of something that's really top of mind for me.
Dude, that's beautiful. Thank you very much for that. And thank you for your time today. This is why we do this podcast. As you are talking about how you've thought through the concept of shadow mission, how you're able to listen to a sermon from a pastor and say, what does that mean in terms of my life? And what does that mean for my fund, my partnership, my relationship with LPs and new companies? To think about the holy ambition that you can have in being a technology investor and how to be able to shape culture and be able to mentor and lead entrepreneurs that are trying to understand what is their value base? What is their North Star? Can they pick any North Star, or is there actually a one and only one North Star? What does that look like? Your ability to faithfully and winsomely witness to that in a very secular world is really outstanding. It's unparalleled. And it's why we do this podcast. Thank you for sharing your story. And it's been awesome to see your success. And I love also, just as we close out, just the way that you guys got back together at the beginning of the year and said, okay, let's revisit our vision and values. Are we missing anything? And let's celebrate the success we've had. And to a certain extent, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you've had a lot of success. But how do we get sharper? And how do we pray together about how God would use this fund in our lives? And that's super encouraging. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Such a blessing to be with you all today. If my partner is listening to this, I just want to call my brother, Chihua, who sharpens me every day. And again, with like the other folks around us, has really been just so instrumental. God's used him immensely in my life. And I just want to say I love you, brother, and thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. We're very, very grateful for the opportunity to serve the larger faith-driven investor community. Hey, the best way for you to stay connected is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdriveninvestor.org. And while you're there, we of course want to hear from you. We derive great joy from interacting with many of you, and it's been very rewarding to see people join the discussion now from all around the world. But it's also very important to us that you feel like this is your show and that you'll help make it something that best equips you on your journey, one that you're proud of and one that you'll share with others. This podcast, it wouldn't be possible without the help from many of our friends. Executive producer Justin Foreman, program director Johnny Wills, music by Carl Kegwell. You can see and hear more of his work at summerdregs.com. And audio and editing by Richard Barley of Cornerstone Church in San Francisco.